Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett and I will be your host for the program. In today's program, we're going to be exploring the rather strange and somewhat murky world of bail bonds and bounty hunting. The industry itself is awash with contradictory legislation, and that in part is what we're going to be exploring today. To add further confusion, legislation varies from state to state. For that reason, we're actually going to be concentrating on the Florida laws, as I'm not quite sure how they relate to other states. Joining me by phone is investigator William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, always good to chat with you.
Always good to chat with you, Simon.
And from the Kansas area, we have Dan Miller. Dan, nice to speak to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Good to speak to you as well.
And Dan, are you a bail bondsman, or what is
it? I'm not, actually. Yeah, I'm a bounty hunter, and I'm new in business. It's just been a couple of months now, so just getting into the business.
Just getting your feet wet, so to speak.
That's correct, yeah.
I'm glad you found time to talk with us this afternoon. We do have our phone lines open, and our switchboard number is 646-378-1120. Also, our chat room is open. So if you have any questions about the bail bond or bounty hunting business, we have just the people on the panel that can answer those questions. Cobra, let's start with you. We've had several discussions on the subject of the bail bond business, particularly in reference to Florida. What can you tell us about this infamous 10% that someone pays to get out of jail?
Well, it's mandatory in the state of Florida that anyone seeking services of a bail bondsman, it's by law that the bail bondsman has to collect 10% of whatever the bond is as his fee.
Okay, now let's talk about this 10%. At what point is it payable?
It's actually, there's a problem with that particular law. It's okay to accept a payment plan so that the defendant can pay on the bond as he is able to. He can work out a pretty decent payment structured plan. However, the backside of that is, and support to all the ones that are doing this, there is no law that can be enforced against him. He cannot be put back in, well, he can be put back in jail at any time, but there's no way to enforce him paying his 10% short of revoking him and giving him whatever money you've collected back to him by revoking and putting him back in jail. So there's really no enforcement of that 10% payment plan. However, it is law that you must charge 10%.
Okay, now what happens in the situation where I call a bail bondsman and I've got $1,000, my 10% is $1,000, but I don't have $1,000. So you as the kindly bail bondsman says, "It's okay, Simon, I trust you. How about you pay me $100 a week?" All right? So I say, okay, I've got $100. Come get me out of jail. So you get me out. However, I decide, for whatever reason, that I don't want to pay you the other $900. What recourse do you have? Can you throw me back in the pokey?
Not for non-payment, but a bondsman's wide open. He can revoke your bond at any time. For a reason or for without a reason. He doesn't need a reason, doesn't need no reason whatsoever. But if he does not have a reason and your failure to pay him his money is not a justified reason, obligated you are by law to give him all his money back, anything that he paid. In your case, if you had paid in $100, you're getting $100 back. Now, you're back in jail, but you're still bondable. And any time you bond out, like I said before, you're on a tether, you're on a string. You're in jail, but you're at the award of this bondsman who has you out. He can pull a hurly-whirly or whatever, or you could have just looked at him a little sideways. Whatever the case may be, he always has the right to put you back in jail, but he does not have the right to put you back in jail for non-payment of the premium. And in that case that you didn't, you weren't paying your premium, and he decided to yoke you, put you back in jail, the $100 that you paid, he has to give back, since it wasn't a justifiable reason to put you back for failure to pay premium.
Dan, does Kansas have the same 10% law?
No, they don't. Kansas is one of those states that's really not regulated that well. And keep in mind, I'm not a bail bondsman, at least not at this time, but have been trying to become familiar with the laws as well as possible with that.
Right. So Kansas is pretty much wide open?
Wide open. It would not be customary to charge, from what I'm understanding others in the area doing. You might see it as high as 15%, but it would be more customary to charge the 10%.
Okay, so there is a glowing example of how things do change from state to state. Cobra, one of the big questions is revocation. What are the sort of legal reasons why a bail bondsman can revoke a bond?
Okay. Well, keep in mind, he doesn't need one, but if he intends to keep the money that he's been paid on the bond, he must come up with a satisfactory reason. One of the reasons would be that the defendant was a flight risk, meaning that he's not going to show up on court. Something has triggered the bondsman, or he has reason to believe, and actually we'll call it more than that. He has proof from a witness or somebody saying that this guy is definitely going to leave town, and so he can revoke it on that. He can revoke the bond if the defendant finds himself back in jail on another situation. Say he got out and he was smoking crack and they got him and shit, you know, most crack guys don't get cured from going into jail overnight or for a few days, so they catch him again smoking crack. Now the bondsman can go off and keep that money, and most time they will. There's a whole bunch of reasons. One is once the defendant has failed to appear, the bondsman has a notice sent to him by the clerk of the court saying you failed to produce the body, now you got to give the money. So there would be a forfeiture coming to the bondsman, so he'd have a right to go get him then. I mean, these are all legal rights to where he keeps the money, you know. He has many different things, but it has to be, you know, I don't have the list in front of me of all the stuff it is, but it's a whole bunch of good reasons why you can put him back in jail, especially if you told him no drinking, you can't be drinking. So he signed off on that, or he signed off on, there's some rules that you sign for when you get out on bond. You're not going to do this, you're not going to do this. These are all things that that y'all have agreed to, and then he would have a legal right to put you back and keep your money. That's the most important thing. A bondsman can always put you back for whatever he decides. The question becomes, do you get your money back or do you not get your money back? But in the bottom of all that, you always are available, for the most part, to rebond that out of jail with another bondsman within seconds. There's no new charge. There's no adding to what happened. It's just either you, A, get your money back, or B, don't get it back. But in either case, you can have another bondsman take you right back out. Or you can self-bond out. There's a whole bunch of ways to do all that. But it's kind of complicated in a way, but it's simplistic. It's so simple, somebody will confuse it. I think
okay.
That's my case. I think somebody got confused.
Right. Okay. Now, who makes the determination of whether it's a good reason to revoke, or it's just being, you're just being bloody-minded and you're going to give the guys 10% back?
Well, there's a standard on most of the contracts and most of the agreement forms that are signed with the defendant and the agent, the certified, the 234 agent that's acting as the bail bondsman, limited surety agent. pretty much it's contractually based, where it's a lot of reasons. They're all standard right there in that contract. And I don't have a contract from me, but those are some of the ones that are already on there. Now, when in Florida, when we take that defendant back to the pokey, there's a form that we fill out on these ACAR. We fill out the bond surrender. Then we also have to send in a form. We actually fill out a form that goes to the state that says this particular defendant was surrendered back to the jail for what reason, and you check out what reason it was, and then you write in what reason it is. And, you know, every so often, I mean, especially if the defendant was to file a complaint later on, they would pull up that slip and look at it and see what the reason stated on there. The defendant wore two different color shoes, and I told him not to do that. Well, he's getting his money back. The defendant was rearrested, gave a false name to law enforcement, and bonded back out with another company. But it's the same defendant. Oh, he ain't getting his money back. So you're actually telling the state, when you're putting him back in, you're telling them why you did it. And, you know, if it's some off-the-wall crap, you know, you're going to give him his money back. And if not, it's going to bear out to that he broke, you know, either the rule or the contract or the law.
Okay, but once again, let's pretend that, you know, I've stiffed you on your $900 and you found some idiot reason to revoke my bond. You've thrown my ass back in jail.
Okay.
Who do I complain to?
You complain, first person that you complain to is to the bail bond company, the bail bond office that you bonded out on. And if it happens to be the head agent that's giving you this ruckus, then it's very simple. On your bail bond paperwork that you have, there is an insurance contact number on there to where you can call direct to the insurance company. And if their paperwork is totally legit, there'll probably be how to contact the state of Florida. We've changed ours. It used to be Department of Insurance. Now it's the Department of Financial Services. But they control all that business. And you could go on the computer from My Florida and look up, you know, Department of Financial Services. But if you're out on bond, you should have that information on your paperwork that you received from the bail bondsman, at least how to make some contacts. And, you know, I always tell people, if you get lost, first thing to do is call Better Business, you know, and usually the Better Business Bureau has had some complaints, so they know who to put you in touch with. So the defendant or whoever it is wanting to make a complaint, such as you, you would have plenty of outsources that you would be able to have your complaint heard.
Okay, that makes a certain amount of sense, I guess. it certainly is a, you know, I'm an outsider looking in, and it does seem like a very complex industry. Now, you were talking about the forms that would be filled out, and you said, okay, you're going to have the contact at the bail bond company, and most likely the contact name for the insurance company.
Right. You'll have the address, and all the paperwork that you sign is coming from there's an insurance company that's actually covering all this. And through their powers down to the bail bond agent, which is a slip of paper saying, hey, you can do such and such in this, there's a company guaranteeing that particular piece of paper out there besides the bail bondsman. That's the insurance company. Their address, phone number, contact information is typically on most of the application forms, since those applications are in the name of a particular insurance company that the person is out on bond with.
Okay, so I'm Joe Bondsman.
Right.
And it's what I'm hearing is that it's not my money that is at risk. It's actually the insurance company's money.
No, not at all. It's your money that's at risk. The insurance company's smarter than that now. You have something called a buff account. You have some form of backing the bond up. You know, a lot of these bondsmen put up their own personal house and everything to get a credit lines of bail. In other words, in order to be, you know, so the insurance company kind of may restrict them too. Say, look, you can write anything up to $10,000, and then after that you have to call me. You can't write anything over $10,000 till you call me. And basically they want to check to see, you know, what kind of bonds you've written, how you're doing, and You know, every time I say, how you doing, I always think about that. How you doing? I think it's been misunderstanding.
Yeah, right.
Lots of communication going on. No, the bondsman will go out of business. If he loses it, they'll just pull his powers back, and they'll turn around and sue the bondsman. The insurance company will. If he's got a buff account, they'll just snatch it right out of the buff account. There's a whole lot of ways that the insurance company has a hold on the agents, the ones who are writing it. Otherwise, they would just write every single bond that came out of there and say, oh, it's your problem, insurance company. I've made $20 million this month, but I don't think you're going to find any of them. But, they limit to how many powers they give you. They limit to what business you can write. And usually there's a buff account. There's some financial holding between the agent and the insurance company. If the business is done right, you know, and we're not talking a slap on the back business, what type of thing. We're talking about, you know, a secured market to where, yes, that bondsman's going to have to do everything in his power to make sure that defendant shows up that particular day in court and has his day in court, and then everybody's cool and everybody made their money and everybody's happy.
All right, I'm even more confused now than I was before I asked the last question. Okay, so it is the bail bondsman's money that is at stake.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what role does the insurance company play?
Well, here's the thing. Say that bail bondsman's in a bunch of trouble, he can't pay the bond, and the guy ran off. Now, the insurance company has to make good on it. Otherwise, they do not write any more, not just with that agent, but they don't write no more bonds until that's taken care of. The state has to have somebody to control. And the insurance company, they can lose a few here and there. A bondsman, he loses $3,000 or $4,000 or $75,000 bonds, he's hurting. I mean, he's pretty much out of business. But the insurance company can get use 10 or 20 of those damn things and not even blink an eye because they're spread out. So there has to be somebody bigger there, you know, with the cash cow, to be able to, you know, because you're not going to have a defendant lost in Miami and that's it. You'll have them lost all over the state and in other states too. So the bondsmen's aren't big enough to cover that. That's where the insurance company will start cashing in whatever they have and taking care of it. Somebody ultimately responsible.
Okay.
Kind of a hazard insurance pay, if you will. I don't know how to explain it to you, but yeah, there's an insurance company behind every damn thing.
Okay. We have someone coming in from the 315 area code. Hello, 315.
Good afternoon, Simon.
Well, hi, it's Denny Griffin.
I had a couple of questions. Hi, Cobra. Can I ask?
Sure.
Okay, I was, first of all, is for a bondsman or a bounty hunter, if you know, are there federal regulations plus state, or is it only state regulations you have to comply with? Or do the feds have a hand in the regulations?
Well, the feds, Denny, are pretty much taken care of under the Taylor versus Tainer. So that's the ultimate law out there. And then what happens is each state has an ability to increase upon, they can't detract from, but they can increase upon those requirements and those things that were already out there constitutionally since 1800s when bounty hunters started, you know, crashing through doors. So the state, and especially the state of Florida, which is one of the better states as far as, not because I live here, just their laws are more stringent, they've outlawed the use of the term bounty hunter, made it a third-degree felony for someone to refer to themselves
Good morning.
As a bounty hunter. We can't even do that. Even folks coming from out of state coming over.
Hi.
Cobra, can you possibly speak up a little bit?
Yeah, I got you, brother. Can you hear me?
Yeah, and caller in the 818 area code, if you can just hang tough with us, we will bring you on the line as soon as we can.
All righty. So, don't know where I was there, Simon, but go ahead.
Denny is...
Yes.
What was the one asking the questions?
Denny,
okay.
I'm sorry, Denny.
So, the federal law, then, is the basis, and the individual states can add on to it. They can't take away.
Yeah, they add on to it, you know, and put a lot more laws and a lot more you can't do this and you can't do that to it. You can always increase upon a law and try to better that law, and that's pretty much what the state of Florida did with the outlawing of the bounty hunting, even the term. You have to be a licensed bail bondsman, a card-carrying 234 limited surety agent, and off you go. But yeah.
Now, my second question was about bounty hunters. If I'm correct, my understanding is that bounty hunters can enter a residence or a building in pursuit of an absconding or a man who needs to be taken back into custody. And is that true that there's a warrantless entry?
You've hit a very, very interesting question,
yeah.
Denny. It's one that Cobra and I have talked about a couple of times.
Yep.
Take it away, Cobra.
Okay. Every bondsman has a warrantless entry if it's to his personal house or he's in running or whatever. And in Florida, I say the term bondsman because that's what we recognize. In Hawaii, that same bondsman would be calling himself bounty hunter. But if a bounty hunter, so to speak, was hired by someone in Hawaii, so to speak, and they traveled to Florida with no credentials, no nothing, they don't even have anything other than a credential they bought somewhere that says bounty hunter on it, and crashes through a door here in Florida, they're in a heap of shit.
They probably get burglary or criminal trespass.
They're armed guys coming in a house. I mean, they're in a heap of shit. And if they take that guy, they really got some problems. So what we try to do is we network with bondsmen outside the state, say, look, if you come into Florida and you lost your guy down here, there's a bunch of guys that we've helped them many times, a lot of times free of charge, just say, yeah, we'll stand by with you, whatever, blah, 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 you get your boy and get the hell out of here. But a bounty hunter coming into this state doing that stuff is going to find himself in a world of shit. He's going to be in jail, locked up. And if the fugitive has a extradition order and the police find him there at the same time, they're going to take him so they can sit in the same cell and look at each other all stupid. You know?
Actually, there's more to this story as well.
Yeah.
And that is that you can't just kick a door down. You know, you have to have proof that the person is behind the door.
Well, I might have confused you with that just a little bit, but say that we know for a fact that Johnny Do-Good or Johnny Did-Bad lives at 201 Mockingbird. We know that for a fact. We know. We talk to neighbors. Yeah, he goes there every night. That's his house, okay? That's the same house number that we have on our file that he bonded out on. Now, we've tried to get a hold of Donnie Do right there, and he ain't trying to respond to us. In fact, he missed court, so instantly we was in court, and we know the warrant hasn't even been issued for his arrest. The judge probably ain't even signed it yet, but we know he missed. So we go to the Johnny Do-Good's place, and he ain't coming out. And door's locked, and we know he's in there. Somebody's in there. This is his house. We're going to warn him, and we're busting the door down and going in there and getting his ass and taking him back to jail. And within a day or so, that warrant hit in the system, but we're going to go ahead and go off the bond. But anybody else trying to bond him, I don't know if they'd be able to get him out right then and there since he had an open warrant for his arrest. But we're going off our bond right then and there if that warrant hasn't hit yet. So, but same token, he is living at that house, and there's no warrant. He didn't miss no court. He just ain't going to talk to the bondsman on the damn phone. Now, I told you on the other episode, yeah, I always like to make sure that he's in there before we go busting down a door and spooking him or having some liability, or maybe he's got little kids and they might just happen when you knock on the door, they might happen to come to the door, they can't reach the doorknob, and you bust the door and bust them. So, you know, you can kick a door, and no doubt about it. You can kick a door and have fun at it. But you have to make sure that the liabilities are out of the way in order to do that. And one thing that I do, and I add, it's not part of the law, we're making sure for sure. If that name is on that file and that address is on that file, it's a good hit. But, you know, common sense is going to need to play in there and make sure that you're doing it. But absolutely, you have the law on your side, especially with being that address is listed there, that's his place, and yada, yada. Yeah, you have a right to that door, absolutely. You don't have to have proof positive is in there. But I like to have proof positive he's in there. I have a damn good suspicion there ain't nobody on the other side of that door waiting to try to hurt me or for me to take the door and hurt them.
But aren't there liability issues? Like,
absolutely.
Let's say the guy's in a hotel.
Right.
And you get the wrong room.
Oh, yeah.
And you go busting down a door.
Well, there's a couple things, Simon, that go with the law. It's just like a police officer. He gets a call, and it was called in. It was a green Honda CRX parked by the 7-Eleven. A guy armed is in that car. All right? right. By the time he gets the dispatch, it's a blue Honda CRX, and just so happens that on the corner he pulls up is a freaking blue one. So he felony pulls up on the guy, gets him out, prones him down on the ground, blah, 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 cuffs him, you know, shut the hell up. Maybe the guy's, like, freaking out. What the hell's going on? That's a little bit of resisting going on there. So the guy's really getting fucked around in this deal. The green car sitting on the other corner. Now, that officer didn't come there with the intent to yank somebody out of a car and prone them down in the road just to be, you know, getting his Cheerio workout for the morning. We call that in the business that, you know, it was an honest misunderstanding or an honest mistake, something to that effect. Now, if the person that was on the ground suffered any kind of injuries, then, of course, his department or whoever take care of that. If the bondsman went out and kicked in the wrong damn door, he need to be replacing that door. But as far as his intent, depending on how he maintains himself as an individual, there was a group of licensed bondsmen that were going through Lehigh not too many months ago, and they were kicking doors one right after the other. I was like, wait a minute, you guys are insane. You can't do that shit. And, you know, of course, some officers would think they had the right to go into anybody's house. Others know the law and know that the only house that they're really legal to go in is the one stated on that application, unless there's something given to them that updates that information and that they have pretty damn good assurances that that be the case. Going to a hotel and saying, hey, John Smith is in your hotel. Here's a picture of him. Oh, he checked in as John Adams. Now, the hotel person is making identification on the picture alone, not on the name because they used a bad name. And they give you room 124, and the guy's really in 123. And you go up and break the door down. Well, you got a major civil issue on your hands there. If somebody got hurt, of course, the deep pockets in this case are going to be the hotel, and then they're going to backtrack through the bond to the insurance company. It's just a bad day. So, it, you know, I don't know what the panic is with, oh, goddamn, there he is. You know, and you have to kick a door and go get him. Hey, okay, he's in over there. Now, he ain't fixing to disappear and go someplace else. Let's put somebody back here and let's watch him. And let's take him at the ultimate surprise level to where least amount of fallout and people get hurt. Everybody's considered to be having a machine gun up underneath their shirt and holding a kid. So if you think about that every time that the hunt is incredible. Once you know about where the guy is, you just slow it down a minute and take some precautions. And if they was to do that, Simon, I think we wouldn't need to be talking about it.
Right.
But they don't. They fall out. There he is. And you jump on his back fast. You can't get him and rope him down to the ground. Throw him in the trunk.
I'd like to ask Dan about door kicking in Kansas. What's the story in that state?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm at the stage where I've just been mostly researching, just getting into the business. But there's some interesting stories here in Kansas. One particular story that just happened a few months ago is it was two bounty hunters and a bondsman, and they actually went out to a home, and they had the wrong home. They not only had the wrong house and forcing entry, but they also had the wrong person they were chasing shortly after that. So they ended up in a high-speed chase over 100 miles per hour down the highway. And when they finally all got pulled over by the police, it wasn't the correct person. So they had a slew of charges coming at them. And I'm not sure what exactly happened in terms of, getting out of some of those charges or if they went to jail, but the more I've been researching, and that's where I think anyone interested in bounty hunting or bail enforcement really ought to do is take the time to research and educate before you just jump in both feet and just start doing it, you know.
Yeah. Simon, the word I was looking for is intent. Intent. That's the number one thing. What was your intent? Did you intend to do a crime, evil, what was your intent all about? What was the intent of this thing? And if you were, really trying to get someone and you were doing something, you made an honest mistake, I don't think there's any crime there. I think that if it's just like a police officer, if he got the blue car instead of the green one, give him the benefit of the doubt. He was called there for a reason.
Indeed. Denny, does that answer your questions?
Yes, but I have one more if I can get, then I'll get out of your hair.
Oh, no, no, you're always welcome. It's always a pleasure to talk to Denny Griffin.
Yes, sir. I even did a radio show with him the other night. Man, I'll tell you what, it was the most interesting show besides, you know, of course, ours. It was a very interesting show, Denny. I felt nothing but compassion for that lady, I swear.
Thanks, Cobra. My question is, once you go into this room or house or whatever in pursuit of the fugitive, and you take him or you find him, you also, when you go in, find what appears to be a stash of weapons, possibly illegal, or a lot of drugs, what appear to be drugs in plain sight, that type of thing. Now, I'm assuming that you don't have police powers in the sense you could seize that evidence or that type of thing, but are you under any requirement, at least a legal requirement, to report what you saw to the police, or would you normally do it just as a matter of doing, even if there's not any legal requirement, would you do it anyway, or would you just take care of your business, get out, and let the evidence or let the potential illegal items just stay where they were?
All the above, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
It's really true. I mean, there's been situations, Denny, when, you know, typically the bondsman will call law enforcement and say, hey, I'm fixing to go over here to the area of Sunshine and Miro, and we're fixing to look for Danny Boy. Does he have a warrant? No, he doesn't. All right, Dan. Well, we'll notify dispatch, and we get calls on it, and they don't come out, because if it's no warrant, it's a civil issue, or they'll stand and keep the peace until somebody puts their hands on the bondsman, then they can step into it because he's a civil servant. But typically, if I was to bust into the door, and in the case of Rendu, here you got, you know, I found guns and stuff later on and stuff like that, and, yeah, I feel that's a duty at that point to contact law enforcement. You run into a place, and there's a bunch of people sitting in there, and they got guns and drugs and every damn thing else, depends on what they got. Depends on what they got going on. Now, there's been cases where the bad guy has planted drugs on the folks in the house, the females and the sister and stuff like that. Had the police been called, they all go to jail. It was easier for me to tell them to take it in the bathroom and flush it and watch them flush it, and no harm, no foul. It's gone. Or they had some weed, or they had some other stuff. And then if they were having pornographic materials out there or something like that, it's up to the bondsman. Typically, we're there for a particular reason and one reason only, that defendant. We're not the law. We don't claim to be the law. That's our boy. We got business, me and him, and that's all the business we got. And everything else is pretty much blind-eyed, unless it is so damn blatantly obvious, or that the community or the welfare of someone else in that house may be affected. Then that bondsman, I believe, my personal thought is, he has a fiduciary duty, if not to himself, to God or whatever, to, you know, make that issue known to law enforcement, and then it's on them what they decide to do with it. But it's going to kind of run it goes to the bondsman. I mean, he could walk in there and see guns laying all over the place and not know what they was, because a lot of these guys that go kick doors have absolutely no training. There's no training in the state of Florida. You would be terrified to know what you could call it, a bounty hunter. You could call it a bondsman kicking a door or whatever. These pickup guys, so to speak, you'd be terrified to know. I was talking to a good friend of mine in the bail bond business, and he goes, man, if somebody kicked my door at 3 o'clock in the morning screaming bail bonds, I'm hitting the floor. Not because I'm scared of them, because I know they have had no training. Now, here's a guy standing in the middle of my living room, 4 o'clock in the morning, with a freaking shotgun, and I got kids in the back room, and he's talking about, I miss court. And I'm looking at his badge. He ain't got no badge, because the state of Florida doesn't allow no badges. So I'm looking at this damn card, and it says insurance on it. And I'm trying to figure out what the hell is an insurance man standing in my house at 4 o'clock in the morning with a damn shotgun. I need to be calling somebody, but this bastard's liable to shoot me. He's got one eye looking sideways, got one eye going the other way, and he just kicked my door in. So, yeah, it's something that there should be some type of training. Just like you're trained to write a bail bond, you should be trained to go pick one up, because we've got some scary Larry people. I mean, if you knew, Simon, that you could be at the hands of one of these Kansas City boys, or we got a man here in Florida too, high speed chasing your ass and trying to put the whoop on you, and you ain't even done nothing, man. You know, you ain't on bond. You know.
Okay, I'm crossing Florida and now Kansas off my list of neat places to visit.
Listen, I used your name the other night on Denny's program, and I said I'm going to have to agree with Simon. Simon's wrote off Putnam County as his Christmas location, and I wrote off Tunafish County, or what was the name of that damn little town up there?
Tarpon Springs.
Tarpon, I knew it was a fishy, there was something fishy going on about it, and I said, I'm marking that off of my damn Christmas list, by God, and I ain't never been there before. Tunafish County.
I have a question. Bail bonds and bounty hunting tend to go hand in hand, although really it's rare that the bail bondsman is the person that is the recovery guy. All right?
Well, let me try to clear it up a little bit better for you, Simon. The law in Florida requires that if you are a writing agent, you've got a business, and you're writing business, in other words, you're there answering the phone, yes, sir, be glad to get him out. Oh, yeah. And you, the one organizing the paperwork and being the bail bondsman, a 234 agent, actually signing off on it, and then you got to take that little piece of paper, run over to the jail, and get your boy out, and bring him back, do a bunch of paperwork and all that. Well, you got to do a whole bunch of those, and you got to have your office open every day, you know, on a normal business day. So if you a mom and a pop operation and you wrote a couple bad bonds, you may go out after you 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, whatever time. The state, you've told the state you're going to have your bail bond open to, and you put a little tag on your window, you're off at the jail or you're doing something, and you open 24 hours, though. By God, somebody calls, you got to run back down there and write a bond. But right now, you're going to run out to the city next door here, about 35, 40 miles, and see if Homer Lean's home. And if he is, you know, snatch his ass up and run over to the jail and put him in, drop another bond, and go back to the office. That's if you're lucky. We don't classify them as bounty hunters or pickup people. We just classify them as bondsmen who the thing went bad and they got lucky, because a bounty hunter, such as the gentleman there in Kansas, a true bounty hunter hunts 50-some states, 234 countries. I mean, he's a hunter. He goes. Now, a regular bondsman, he can't get in his truck like me. I'm gone 290 days. Well, I used to be. I ain't now. I'm on suspension with no pay. But 290 days a year, I'm gone. I'm working different states. I'm gone. I mean, really gone. I don't have a permanent address for that reason. Post office box, and, you know, I'll have it forwarded out to me where I'm at. But I'm on the road 200.
Black truck somewhere in California.
Oh, yeah, I was out there not too long ago. See, in some states I can still hunt, but I'm trying to stay close to home here because, one, I got to get my defenses ready and, you know, and do my politicking shit and wonder what the hell are we going to order as soon as this big reward check comes in.
Right.
A helicopter, that's what I'm trying to buy.
We have a question coming in from the chat room, and I'll do my best to make this into English. Mm. All right, how does one become undercover working with someone to get a license? Who would you contact? And then the question actually got changed. She means, like, how do you do searches for someone and not get into trouble for it?
You can't do that. The searches that they're doing, like you're trying to help somebody out being a CI, confidential informant, if you're, first of all, you're paying way too much. If you're going on the internet-based search channels, you're not going to get the full amount for your dollar. You're going to have to keep paying. You'll be able to put a file together, but that wouldn't be the way to do it. Most of the IRBs, the LexisNexis, the AutoTrax, all these different programs that are used out there to track folks, that's if they're leaving an address or leaving a trail. You know, that's pretty much a runner, not a fugitive, somebody's going to have to hunt. It's somebody just stupid, you know, still using a post office box or whatever. Those particular searches, you either have to be a licensed private investigator. Some of them have opened up for bail bondsmen since they realize that bail bondsmen actually do that. There's couple other, different kind of license you can have to have that. But if you're doing that stuff and working for somebody and you're not licensed in any capacity, it could come back to bite you in the tail real hard, especially if the defendant was to find out how he was found out. I mean, there's a lot of civil issues that raise themselves up for that. So either get in the business, and you can do that. I'll throw a little piece out there. There's, if you're in Florida, 305 bonding. You can also call 800-BAIL-YES. There's a couple of different places that you can call. If you're going to be talking about bail bonds or anything like that and you want to know some of the truth versus the myth, I would say contact a master bondsman. Now, master bondsman is not a term that we use a lot, but we know who the master bondsmen are. You got Wayne Spath in Fort Lauderdale. He's a master bondsman. You got Big Al Estes up in next to Tampa. He's a master bondsman. And you got Jim Viola with the Bounty Girls down in Miami. Now, those are top-notch guys that know something about, they know a little something about the bail bond business. In fact, Wayne Spath was on the Blue Ribbon panel. And if you got lucky, and you was able to contact the master's master, that would be Sally Burt. And Sally Burt wrote most of the laws. In fact, she's the one that wrote the law specific. Bounty hunting is a third-degree felony, period. So if you're going to reach out for information, try to reach out to a master bondsman. Try to reach out to the state of Florida under the Department of Financial Services, Alex Sink's office, and look up all the helpful information there, and then you'll find guidelines what to do and who to talk to. But if somebody represents to you that they're a bounty hunter and you have to be standing in this great state, you are talking to the wrong person.
Okay, you mentioned the fact that to avoid getting into civil issues,
mm-hmm.
It's best to have a private investigator license.
Well, it depends on what IRB, NexisLexis, one of these paid programs that you sign up to, and you get get an account with them. Some of them require you to be a bail bondsman, or they require you to be a private investigator, and I'm talking licensed by the state rules of whatever state it is. They make those requirements on you. You're a professional at in their eyes, and you're not some armchair guy doing some investigative work and using the system to locate folks and end up catching the wrong. Some of this stuff that was going on this past Haley case, they were looking up a particular name, and they ended up getting every name. There's thousands of people in the state with the same name and close to the same stuff. So they were sending out stuff all over the internet that didn't involve the fugitive or the felon, but it involved innocent folks, and their stuff was splattered out there. So, yeah, you get into a liability situation. So if you're licensed and you know a little bit of something about it, and you go to one of these companies, LexisNexis, IRB, whichever, the AutoTrack, any of those, chances are you're not going to be using the information to stalk or harass or just being some dumbwit out there with it. I mean, you know, everybody wants to try to help find somebody if they did something awful bad, but there's professionals out there that will find them. I mean, we'll get them. We appreciate you. You know, pray for us. don't try to run backgrounds and send us information. Jesus Christ.
I worked for several years in the banking industry. I know that sounds bizarre. I did too.
That's our finance. That's our boss. She was a big-time banker. So, yeah, this all goes into financial. You ought to know a little something about it.
Right. Well, what I was going to say is that one of the areas that concerned us was bad loans.
Mm.
All right, and we had
a banker, yeah.
Right. In fact, the bank I worked for was Bank of America.
Oh Lord!
And we had a section, if you will, that handled consumer finance. You know, cars, refrigerators that you buy at Kmart or whatever, and. You know, a lot of the loans were reasonably small, and people would get the loan and not pay it back. So we had a collections department, and part of the mission was to locate the person. I think the technical term is skip tracing.
Repo guys, yeah.
Right. Our skip tracers definitely were not licensed to do anything.
A lot of them in the state aren't either, Simon. I mean, we have a lot of skip tracers here, and it's all about the terminology that you use. I know skip tracers ain't never been licensed, and some of them are the baddest in the world, and one of them's a nurse, of all things. But skip tracers, I mean, somebody trying to find somebody for a fee, like can you locate this person, it's a big difference of tracking them via computer and then getting in your car and on an airplane or whatever and tracking them and walking up and go, he is. So there is a lot of people that do that, but they also have to be very mindful of stepping across the line.
Right. And you mentioned licensing early. Well, in fact, training, right. Education. I'm going to ask Dan this question, seeing as Dan, you're new in the bounty hunting business.
That's correct. Yeah.
What kind of training have you received?
Okay. Well, now first, everyone's going to get a chuckle out of this because I got to tell you, I first got interested. I came from the aviation industry, by the way, and I first got interested by watching Dog the Bounty Hunter. So a lot of people, there you go.
There you go.
A lot of people can identify with that going on, and especially in this industry, they're going to go, what the heck? But it's just like the aviation industry. There's always something that people like about it, even though their perception may be far different than it actually is.
Yeah.
So what I did is I start to research. I started to educate myself as best I could. And one of the first people that I met in the industry was Scott Harrell out of Florida, and took his online courses. I've never personally met the man, but he kind of lays it out in his introductory type of bounty hunting course and surveillance course, which is good because it gives you a framework from which to start from. And I think that's important in anything that you take on that's new, is try to have some kind of foundation from which to build and then continue learning, you know, just continue reading and learning and interacting with people in the industry, which is where I'm at now. See, I don't just jump in with both feet in anything that I do that's new to me. But I try to communicate with those that are veterans in the field and learn as much as I can. And gradually, I think when they build some trust in you and learn that you actually have some integrity, they might actually start to give you some work. But I think what we're seeing in this industry from the research that I've been doing is it's the public perception that a lot of times other people in the industry that are looking at bounty hunters going, do you have a criminal record or do you not have a criminal record? Can I trust you or not? It's an integrity issue because, like in Kansas, for example, there are no requirements for a bounty hunter. Absolutely none. I could buy a badge, I could put it on there, call myself a bounty hunter, and of course, legally I can't actually go and do anything more than any other citizen, but that's just how easy it is. I would need the bail piece and some other documents to actually go and make the arrest. However, I think that's a large part of the problem in the industry when you get to education and training. And I heard Cobra talking about IRB, for example, you know, when you go and have a way of actually researching backgrounds on people. I believe this is why they're skeptical as well. You know, if you look at PIs in Kansas, private investigators, they have a screening process. They have background checks. They have demonstrated that they at least fall into a category of likely somebody trustworthy. Whereas on the bounty hunter side, you don't know what you're getting.
Is that the same in Florida? Like I can just come down for a weekend visit and do some recreational bounty hunting?
No, brother, you get your ass thrown in jail doing that shit. You tell him, Danny, he ain't right. Have you done any bounty hunting up there in the great state of Mississippi? Or better yet, did you go around the corner and talk to them two old boys yet?
No, hell no.
Well, if you won't talk to two bounty hunters, you sure as hell don't want to talk to no fugitives.
No, I mean, is there a legal requirement in Florida?
For?
Bounty hunting.
I
know that legally I can't bounty hunt, but,
right.
You know, is there a legal requirement that I must meet if I'm going to go and apprehend someone has done something bad on that bond?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, we have a full licensing deal down here. You trying to come get licensed? That means you're going to come down here, or are you going to be one of those guys living in Mississippi and you're going to get like an out-of-towner license? Now, we got them too. But you got to go through our shit, and then when you need to come to Florida, we'll help you out, you know?
Okay, so there is some legal stuff in Florida.
Oh, brother, you're gonna end up doing an internship. You're going to go to a classroom. You're going to learn all about how to rob people out their money being a bail bondsman. You're going to learn about that because that's what's really going on the other side of this thing. As far as you wanting to get down and dirty with it and be a pickup guy or in your little secret world a bounty hunter or a guy who goes and chases skips or whatever you want to call it, a bondsman that looks for folks, or they don't even have a separate classification for it. But if that's what you want to do, you're still going to have to become a licensed 234 agent in the state of Florida to go put your hands on somebody.
Okay, so Dan, let's say that you pick up a gig, and the bond was written in Kansas, and the guy has skipped to Florida.
Uh-huh.
Would you happily go to Florida and apprehend him?
No, not at all. Now, I haven't been faced with that yet, but even as far as Missouri, by the way, which is right next to me, Just a very brief research of their laws would indicate you'd have to be a resident, licensed, and nobody would ever want to ignore those types of things. If you're going to go into a state you're not familiar with, you better just slow down, do your research, your due diligence, and find out what's going on over there. If you have any doubt, and even if you do think you're in the right, I would still personally pick up the phone, call someone in that state who knows what they're doing, who's been working it, and just be honest about it. Just say, I've got this particular person, and if you know you can't go there, well, it's the end of the story. You can't go there, but you might be able to refer that to someone who can work with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly right. Just like we're licensed in Florida, and somebody skips and takes off, in most states, we can go get them. Now, the only thing we really have to check on those states, and I learned this several years ago after the bondsman's denied sending me after a guy in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's got some laws about treaty issues, about extradition them. And you have to have an extradition hearing, same as Texas. And I went down to Texas, and you take them, you can go get them. You can't kick a door in for them. You can go pick them up, but you have to take them straight to a magistrate and have an extradition hearing on them and see what happens. Now, Kentucky, Kentucky is a no-bond state, so you can't go running off in Kentucky and grabbing up nobody. But at the same time, if he is... There's many ways to skin a cat. If he has got nationwide extradition, then you can just tell the police, hey, I'll buy you lunch if you go over there and grab this feller up. He's been doing X, Y, Z, and here's a warrant, and you can check your system, and you got a warrant, and hold him, and y'all ship him back to Florida when you get damn good and ready. I did my job.
Okay, I do want to ask a very quick question while it's still hot on my mind. You said the phrase, no bond state. What does that mean?
It means that they bond themselves out. If you saw that transmittal I sent to you about that little lady, they bonded her out with the 10% of it. The actual state acts as a big bondsman. They don't allow bondsmen to be writing bonds there. The courthouse, when you go down there, how much is the bond, and you pay them a piece of it. Now, of course, if you take off out of there and you got a little misdemeanor or something, it's not going to be nationwide extradition. So you could actually come to Florida and live down here having a warrant for you for till statute runs out in Kentucky. If you ever show back up in Kentucky or a surrounding state, that's your ass. But if you stay down here, no problem. Now, see, if that person was involved in a civil issue to where he broke Johnny's nose or something and the family's wanting him to stand his day in trial, basically he can jump from state to state or county to county and bypass, since there's nobody actively searching for him. That brings up a thing that I'm against, this pretrial release. You know, right. Pretrial release, and that's a whole, probably another whole damn show. In fact, one of my buddies, Wayne Spath, the Blue Ribbon guy for the state of Florida, he spent 7 hours talking about that on a damn radio station. So it's pretty serious. But always remember that folks on bond, there's a check and balance system. And the bondsman is that final check. In other words, if he runs off to Missouri, well, hell, the Fort Lauderdale Police Department ain't going to go find him. So the bondsman will. So if there's any chance of some of these folks ever standing for justice, whatever they did, and they're out on bond, hopefully it's one of these master bondsmen or somebody that understands the system and says, yeah, we're going to bring him back and let him stand for what he did.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just want to remind our listeners that we do have open lines, and the number to call is 646-378-1120. I'm going to go to the very quiet Denny Griffin.
Yes.
Denny, you've been listening to all of this. I know you're a man that likes to listen in and think. Any questions for us?
A comment probably is, Cobra mentioned a few minutes ago about the lack of training and how a lot of us would be terrified if we knew that the guy who might be kicking your door in had no training. And I remember in my mob stuff, my mob research, that one of the things that Tony Spilotro, the Chicago outfit enforcer, once said was that he'd rather be robbed or confronted by a professional criminal who knew what to do than somebody on their first big trip out, because he said those people were the most dangerous.
That's
so,
but he's right.
It made me think that, and it seems as though with the amount of authority, apparently, that the bounty hunters have, mm-hmm. like being able to kick in doors and so forth, that there would be more of a training thing. I'm quite frankly a little surprised that there's not more stringent requirements for training before the people are turned loose.
Oh, here's what they're trained on. They're trained on how to collect your money. They trained on what to do with your money. They're trained on who to give your money to. And they're trained on some other things. They ain't really trained on how to spend your money, but they're trained on anything having to do with that piece of paper and that jail and the state and all that. Boy, you got to go through, oh, my God. You're trained. But now the defendant gets up and gets gone on you. And, oh, well, you've been trained for this, right? Wrong. There's nothing that trains you to go pick up a defendant. Hell, half the guys that I've went out with don't even know how to put on a pair of handcuffs. And if they do put them on, they don't know how to get them off. And if they do know how to get them off, they ain't got no damn key. And the bullets, they ain't got no bullets in the gun. Or they got one piped up and the safety's off and they're ready to go. And they waving that shit around. Or, you know, like my good buddy Dog Chapman. I mean, shit, if the guy comes out and raises his hands, open fire on his ass with a paintball gun. I mean, there's so many different things. The idea is a peach. That's your fruit. And you're supposed to go and pick up your fruit. Don't bruise it if you ain't got to, and deliver it back to the produce shop, because that's where you're taking it, right back down to the jailhouse. And you want to get it from point A to point B in one piece, hardly bruised, if at all, and get him back in there and be well-trained in that. Not, we got crazy things. Down here in Florida, we had a guy hijack a Lamaze class. Here's all these women in there getting ready to have babies in a couple of days doing deep breathing. And one of our rookie guys finds out that the damn defendant that we've been searching blind for is fixing to have a baby, and he's going to be at this Lamaze class at 2 o'clock. We told him, stand down. Just catch him. Catch him when he goes to the store to get them pickles at 2 o'clock in the morning. He's going to go get ice cream and pickles at 2 o'clock in the morning. Get him then. No, he runs up in that Lamaze class with that big old cannon. Hey, get on the floor. Everybody is on the floor. Lay down flat. Well, hell, they fixing that down. Lamaze went out the window. I mean, stupid shit. You know, and they're not trained. They just, there he is. Oh, and just jump out of the car right in the middle of downtown traffic and let's pull pistols and see if we can get this fella. You know, stupid shit. There is no training, absolutely none. The training they get is training in a school of hard knocks. They kick in the door or something fucks up, oh, well. And if it don't, okay, they learn a little bit. Maybe learn how to kick the door a little different next time. But Denny, it's a scary business, bro. I wish Eisner would call in and tell you. They'll tell you right now, somebody come in my door, me and Isaac, we hitting the floor. They sell bail bonds, I'm getting under the bed.
Well, Dan mentioned a little bit ago about the high-speed pursuit in Kansas, I guess it was,
yeah.
And they had the wrong person. It wasn't even the fugitive.
Right.
I'm wondering, not only apparently were they open, and the bounty hunting people were open to charges for any violations of the law, speeding,
oh, yeah.
reckless driving, all that kind of stuff.
Hell yeah.
Sure.
I had a guy known, he pulled a pistol out, seen the guy in front of him in the damn car, and said, shit, there he is. Jumped out of the car, blam, 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 opened fire, shot his tires the hell out of his car. And the guy drives off on the damn, you know, tires are blowing off all over the road and shit. High speed, I mean, I'm driving like a maniac, too. Somebody just shot my damn tires out, sitting at a red light. So, yeah, listen, we have had some clowns. And what's really embarrassing is when they leave up out of here and go up to Kansas or go someplace else and involve us in a bunch of bullshit. That's embarrassing. But it could all be rectified quite easily if they would just have some training. The state could make a bunch of money off of it, $600-$700 a class, whatever. Half these people ain't never shot a gun. I was out with a almost master bail agent, and I say almost master because we went and got this feller. He pulled out his pistol, and his holster and his pistol was one. They were stuck together. He never pulled that thing out. The bullets was corroded to the side. The gun, the hammer would not pull back, nothing. Because I recovered it after he got, and I'm like, what the shit? Dude, listen, there's some, just no training in it. It's a scary-ass mission to find out that the guy standing in your living room works for an insurance company at 4 o'clock in the morning with a shotgun screaming about what happened.
Let me ask you a question, too, about firearms.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if, let's suppose, well, you're in Florida, let's suppose you got information that a fugitive is in Tennessee, for example, maybe a bad dude, and you want to go pick him up, and you feel more comfortable being armed. What is the status? Do you have to have a carry permit from each state you're going to work in, or how does that work with your?
No, they're kind of hard to get. But what you do need to know is you do need to know the laws in each state. For example, we get a lot of folks out of New York City. And we do not take guns. We usually just fly in New York just as naked, sometimes not even without any handcuffs. We have zip ties, or we'll buy handcuffs when we get there or something just so we can get through the process of bullshit. And then we'll contact law enforcement. First off, we're not even going unless the guy's a high-risk felon and there's an extradition warrant for him. And then what we're going to do is go meet with PD up there, and they're going to do their job, and they're going to go ahead and either we're going to locate the guy, they're going to either assist us or take him into custody and book him and then do the extradition process for us. There's still a need for that hunter, that guy that can go out and find them, and then, you know, work it out with law enforcement or however it is. But there are many states that allow us to do as Florida does, strap on the old pistol and go get his ass. But you do have to be cognizant of these states that do not allow the open carry or do not allow you to have possession of a gun without their state's permission. So you have to be cognizant of that. In fact, if you was to call our state, they'll tell you that when in Rome, do like the Romans do. You know, we don't speak for them, and they don't speak for us. So suggest that when you're there, you follow their laws. So in each state, when you're going through them, you pretty much have to have that. You can't be, you know, if you pick up somebody in West Virginia and you're transporting them back, you're good to go in all the states. You're going to stay armed and come on down the road. But if you're out around, yeah, you might not be able to have a firearm, Denny.
Okay. Makes sense. Thank you.
Or mace, or handcuffs, or any damn thing. Some of them want you to be naked. You know, nope, we don't want you to touch them. Like Florida, you come down here without a license and you got a packet of paper and you're looking for someone. Not very many people are going to step up for you. You may as well just go on to the local police department and hopefully there's an extradition warrant for him, because if you're a bounty hunter with no license whatsoever and you come to Florida, we're not going to risk getting ourselves in trouble for your dumbass being down here. You should have, you know, called the insurance, because all of them are with some insurance company, and if it's a big enough insurance company, they got agents in every state.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, carry on, Denny.
I just had a thought. Could this possibly happen? Suppose you go to this other state and you find your person who's it's strictly a revocation of the bond. There's not an active warrant out for this individual. And the bondsman just decided to revoke the bond. and wants the guy back, and you went out and got him, and maybe you were carrying a firearm, for example, without the necessary paperwork for that state, or you did something else wrong, you had the right guy, you pick him up, then someone calls the cops because they see this thing going down with you taking this guy out, and you're found illegally carrying a firearm. There's no active warrant for the guy, for the fugitive.
Mm-hmm.
Could you end up in the slammer and he's loose?
You could. You very much could, Denny. That's why I say these bondsmen, you know, some of them have a good feeling for law enforcement. Some of them don't like law enforcement no better than the fugitives themselves do, and they kind of like one step from being a fugitive, their damn self. It's like this. Treat people. It's like this. Treat people how you want to be treated, and hopefully they'll treat you likewise. Sometimes it's customary to where, you know, if I was law enforcement, most law enforcement's, all right, what'd this guy do? All right, he ran off and he's out of Florida and da 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 da. I ain't gonna mess with the guy. I'm gonna let the guy. He's doing his business and let him go a bit about his business. Now, can they screw anybody? Well, look at my case in Florida. I mean, shit. I worked for this insurance company for over 10 years, a standing appointment. And I go get a guy that's on bond with that same insurance company, same thing. And being that I wouldn't go along with their program with this deal, so to speak, they're going to up mine because I had a firearm on me. Never drew it, but I had it on me because I was in uniform and I was about doing my business. So they can, anybody can get you in a trick bag at any time. You're just going to have one thing that every hunter has is he's got that little fur on the back of his neck. If it starts standing up, stand down.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. If it stands up, stand down. That's my rule, you know. But I was so damn sick, you know, I don't know when it's standing up, you know.
Actually,
you know, you just never know. You just never know if they're going to treat you right, you know, or you're going to get some hillbilly home cooking, and, you know, hey, I guess so. But, you know, the guy did something, and he ran. I mean, he took off out of Florida and went someplace else, and even though there's no warrant, the bondsman's free to go get him. And now he's just going to have to tiptoe if he's, you know, if he's in Kentucky, good luck. I mean, maybe, just maybe, you could give him some tickets to come over to Tennessee and go to the football game or something. I mean, anything is possible. You got to,
yeah.
You know, that's part of being a hunter. I mean, every hunter, even in nature, doesn't go right out there and jump up in there and grab a bird and go eat it. Some of them got to, act a part and do certain things. There are certain things you got to do in order to get your boy or get your girl, see?
Right.
Get your tray, you got to do it right.
Actually, Denny, even if you do have all of the right credentials and the carry permits, etc., you can still get on the wrong side of the law. You just have to ask Cobra about that one.
Well, listen, I'm going to defend the law in this part. I'm going to just say...
No, I was talking about your recent adventure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd defend the law on all of it anyway, just because... You know, somebody has to tell the law, that somebody has to make a complaint against you saying, hey, he did X and such, and, you know, go on. Oh, the one here in Sunrise? Oh, shit.
Yes.
Yeah, that was one of the deals where we contacted law enforcement and said, hey, we're filming a movie. And not only are we filming a movie, but we have some very dangerous cats that we're going to go get tonight. And the first one on the hook is there's no warrant on him. He has just stole a bunch of stuff while he's been on bond. We got a sworn affidavit to that. They don't want to prosecute. They just want to put him back in jail on his original bond. And before he hurt somebody, he has whooped his woman's butt, and he's pushed the kid around a little bit. And Demitor called and said, we want off the bond, period. Okay, and they'll sign a paper to pull you off the bond. Even if she didn't, after we heard that, we about to come get him any damn way. So we call the police, tell them, hey, blah, blah, blah. Does he have a warrant? Nope. All right, we're not going to involve ourselves in that. That's a civil matter, and likely so. We'll keep the peace. If anything pops off, we'll be there for you. So we missed the guy. He wasn't there. So nothing happened. No harm, no foul. Next time we called the police, they said, listen, unless he's got a warrant, don't even bother calling. Okay, fine. So we go to the house, and all these sound mics on these big old poles and stuff, we probably look like giants coming down the street with all these lights and stuff. And the advance crew is already trying to get the guy and secure him before the cameras come right up on it. And a call goes out to the police that there's 14 men and women, heavily armed, black and white, coming out of the house, dragging somebody in and screaming like hell. Send everybody. Well, they did. And then ask us, why didn't you call the police if you had this high-risk felon here? And they said, well, it's because he don't have no warrant. He goes, well, still, how you picking him up then if he ain't got no warrant? I mean, it depends on who you run into out there. They don't know that a bondsman could surrender a person with or without a warrant for calls or no calls. It only comes down to an issue of whether or not money is going to start changing hands. That's all. It doesn't matter. He's on bond. He's your property. He's as good as my dog. If my dog ran out of the street, I'd go get my dog out the street. Or I can leave him out there in the street. I don't care. That's my dog.
Okay, this actually does segue into a very serious area. And that is that the laws are so damn convoluted. It's that they can be taken eight ways to Sunday.
Mm. Yeah.
You know,
that's a bad thing.
It's a very bad thing.
Well, they should teach it eight ways from Sunday. They don't teach it eight ways from Sunday. They teach it how it is in the book, how it reads. For example, Florida's chapter 648.30.3, or paragraph 3, or section 3. You read that. Okay, these are two things you need to go get somebody out on bond. You need a qualifying power of attorney, and you need a bail bond license. Doesn't say anything about permission, doesn't say you need a gun, doesn't say any kind of shit in there. Just says that's all you need, and you can do that. And what do? You can surrender him to the jail, or you can bring him back to the bail bond office and talk to him, or you can just say, hey, how you doing, just checking, and let him go. There's many, many things you can do. But what happens is they try to pervert the law to make it fit their issue. And, of course, my issue is deeper off than a false imprisonment charge out of Putnam County. It's a much, 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 much deeper than that. And pretty soon it'll all come out. And then hopefully before that all happens, half of these guys that are in the shit are in jail already. For lying and for cheating and for taking honey buns in a jail. Jesus Christ.
Okay, so let's talk COBRA just for a second.
Oh, boy.
Earlier in the show, we were discussing under what circumstances you can revoke a bond. And pretty much, it's any reason at all. In fact, you, myself, and another bail bondsman were talking on the phone the other day, and I won't repeat the conversation, but literally, you can revoke it for any reason that you want.
Absolutely correct.
All right. So how can you possibly have a false imprisonment charge slapped on you?
Try to figure this one out. This guy was out on Continental Heritage paper, which Continental Heritage ain't wrote no bonds in Florida for a long time because they can't, because maybe they didn't pay something, or maybe they screwed the state out of a bunch of money. I don't know, but they're forfeited from writing any bonds in Florida, have been for a long time. So the only agents that have paper is people who have past business, that those cases haven't come to court yet on Continental Heritage paperwork. Or there's people out there that need to be picked up. And so somebody's got to have a damn appointment in order to go get that particular person. So you got an appointment. This guy is out with Continental Heritage. I am a Continental Heritage employee, for lack of better words. I'm a qualified power holder that has rights even to put a seal on paperwork, do whatever the hell I want to do, up to $200,000. And this guy is on bond, all right? A bondsman can pull him back in, especially a bondsman with the same damn insurance company he's out with, and then they're going to turn around and say, we never gave permission. I say, you gave me permission when you appointed me, and you give me that permission every odd year. Every even year I slide by, every odd year I get a new permission. April 1st, you get a new permission slip if you're going to work with them or not. If they're going to fire you or you don't work with them no more, they got a registered letter your ass into the state, and you'll get letters from everybody then saying, hey, can't do no more business with this Continental Heritage people because they don't want you no more. Good. You've been fired. You're terminated. Now, if you go out and touch somebody, you may have a problem.
Oh, yeah.
You may have a problem at that stage. But if the guy's out on bond, he happens to be out on the same bond with the exact same insurance company that you are appointed with, and then somebody can say, we never gave him permission, and the law will believe that, there's a lot of confusion in there, you know. But the insurance company had a reason for doing that. And the law had a reason for following the law. I said he picked him up. And apparently they didn't look into all the licenses or any of the laws or anything, and they just went ahead, and I'm facing trial. So it'll come out at trial, and I look for it to be successful. For me, I don't look for it to be successful to the insurance companies anymore. They're going to be in some trouble. You know, there's some good ones out there and there's some bad ones out there, Simon, and it's the same with the bail bonds and the bounty hunters and the whodunits and the whodunits.
Right.
Yeah. But really, I mean, you know, that's the hardest thing. I mean, you know, here you are a bondsman. You've done everything you can do to be a bondsman. You've got a very, very, very successful track record. You've worked with every branch of law enforcement from, you know, all the alphabet boys, imaginable local law enforcement, foreign law enforcement, overseas law, everybody. And you're known to be the guy that goes and gets them. And then all of a sudden you end up on a fake-ass charge. If I was going to falsely imprison somebody, I've had an enemy or two in my life. If it's not out on bond, that would be the person I'd try that shit on. But as far as going and picking up somebody who is on bond with a particular insurance company, and that person picking him up, putting hands on him, is also appointed by that insurance company. At best case scenario, he said, she said, they didn't give permission. It's a civil matter, and it's handled through administration. It's not handled through criminal process. So this is a miscarriage of justice, and it's a polluted way of treating somebody that has given 30, 35 years of his life to better the society that he lives in to bring these peckerheads back in and stand trial. Period. I don't understand it, ain't been able to understand it, and at first it hurt my feelings, then it made me sorrowful, now it's got me pissed off. So every bad, evil turn of the stick that they've done, oh boy, far worse than I've ever done, far worse than any honey bun delivery at the damn jail, I'll assure you that, buddy.
Dan, you're obviously listening to this tirade. Are you thinking about going back into the aviation business?
Oh, well, no, actually I'm not. But first I got to say I'm going to have to go here in a few minutes, in a couple minutes. But I do enjoy the aviation field. I was an airline pilot, flight instructor. But I think what draws me so much to this industry is, from my research to this point, it seems like the bail enforcement agent, the bondsman, very important part of the criminal justice system. However, the industry is riddled with problems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the lure. That's what, you know, it's like any business that you go into, you look for problems and you look for solutions.
Right.
And it's not a quick fix. But I think as we gradually move towards people who are deviants themselves, maybe not being allowed to do some of these things, I'm not trying to discriminate, but there are people out there that are less than trustworthy. As we start to get better training, as we start to learn that we need to educate, and the way I look at it, it's 80% education, 20% action. It's the same thing in most any industry. You have to do your due diligence. You have to be thinking. Use a good a measure of common sense. If you're unsure about something, don't do it. Stand back. Think about it.
I go far in this business, my friend. I really do. Just remember that everybody out there ain't your friend, number one, but you are the last defense in the justice system. You are it. When somebody gets gone to another state, the FBI is not looking for them. They're doing high-profile cases. There's nobody, unless they stop you in a traffic stop, there's nobody aggressively hunting you by ground, smelling the dirt to find out where you went. So I commend you, brother. It's a hell of a way for a man to earn his money.
Well, thank you.
If I could fly, I'd damn sure trade you.
I appreciate that. And one last note, I also want to say that, you know, I know that the legal system isn't always accessible. What I try to educate people in the industry and in business about is prepaid legal. This is not a plug here. I just want to say, because of that, I'm able to take all my contracts, all my questions. I have an attorney reviewed. Everything that I think I'm going to do is reviewed by an attorney. And I want to make sure up front whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, which actually recently I discovered a couple of different areas. That made quite a difference. I don't really have a lot of time right now to go into it, but basically one was you got into weapons, and I see an area where especially those who have criminal backgrounds are not carrying a handgun, and even those who don't, they opt to carry a non-lethal weapon. But unfortunately, a lot of times they're carrying the non-lethal concealed. And at least in this particular state, that's a Class A misdemeanor, carries 1 year, up to 1 year in jail, and all because you concealed the weapon. Another law that I see that people seem to be kind of unaware about is in this state, every single apprehension, it's not optional to contact law enforcement. It is mandatory to go to the agency and produce certain documents as well as a government-issued ID card. And failure to do this is also a Class A misdemeanor.
They should have that law here, my friend. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dan,
it would still work.
Dan,
yeah.
before you go, I really would like to talk more to you. If you have a chance,
sure.
If you go to www.bloggernews.net, which is I'm sure that's where you found the link to this program.
Yeah.
There's a big black box on the right-hand side of the screen that says Writers Wanted. That's my email address. So drop me a line, because I really would like to talk more with you.
Very good. I appreciate that. It's been a pleasure talking with all of you today. I'm going to have to bow out.
It's been a pleasure talking with you, Dan. And happy bounty hunting.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Have a good day.
Good luck. Good luck, Dan.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
You mentioned a comment earlier on, something called pre-trial release.
Yeah.
Okay, what is it?
Well, pre-trial release is an entity that picks and chooses who they want to let out of jail on pre-trial. It was originally, in my understanding, set up for the indigent. You've been in jail 4 or 5 days, your bond's $25. You ain't got nobody. The bail bondsman ain't going to take a chance on you for $25. I mean, there's very low ones like that, and just indigent status. Pretrial was set up so that no one would be held in jail because of their inability to pay. So pretrial would pick up those folks that had been in jail for a while, that the bondsman's passed over, and they'll release those out. All right, they're funded by the county, by the state, by somebody. They're making money on freeing up the jail space so that they don't have to build new jails, because if everybody's sitting in there on $25 or $100 bonds, then it would take up space in the jail. So pretrial was developed to take that problem away. These are the indigents of the world, that the bail bondsmen's, there's no way that the bail bondsman post a bond, yada, yada, yada. So pretrial let them out, and they signed some papers with pretrial and everything. Well, the problem I have with pretrial is that once that defendant skips and takes off someplace, all pretrial does is give it over to the deputies, which they already got the warrant and everything for them. And if you get stopped in a traffic stop somewhere, they might find you in Kansas or something, and that's about the size of it. There's nobody physically on the ground hunting you. And there are numbers of reshow backups, you know, people coming back to court and doing the right thing, are off. I mean, they're not, some of them ain't showing back up, and some of the more bad ones. And the thing is pretrial, since they get money for this stuff, they've stepped over it to where they're not hurting my industry as far as pickups go, but the bail bond industry itself, where they're taking the cream of the cream. Guy's been in jail 2 hours. Yeah, pretrialing. Well, he raped 4 kids. He's got $2 million in the bank. He can pay bond. Pretrialing. And two things that happened there. One, you hurt the bail bondsman. You kind of made it more of a state issue, to where the state's going to be, you know, controlling a lot more bigger of the pot. So the bondsman's hurt because he's not getting those people out on bond where they have the ability to pay. There is somebody on the outside to be responsible. And if something goes wrong, by God, that bondsman now is going to put his hunters and go hunt this guy down and bring him back, especially if it's any size of a bond whatsoever. They're going to bring his ass back. Now, pretrial does not do that. So they need to go back, fall back to their indigent status, to where the person has to be, you know, found indigent, to where he can't make bond, and then pretrial take him out, rather than doing the cream of the crop as soon as the guy gets in jail without even finding out that he's got $2 million or $2,000 or $20,000 or whatever, just letting him go. And they do that to increase their numbers. The more people they take out, of course, hey, state, we need some more money, man. You know, and these numbers are in the $3, $5, $10 million basis, and they're doing that, and it sells to the cities because you don't have to build no jail. We're going to pretrial them right out of here. Now, I don't know if they're going to come back or not, but we're going to let them go. And then here we go. They're round robin, off they go. So my tick is with it, one, there's nobody hunting these people to get out on pretrial, and two, they're taking the cream right off the crop, and they're not letting the bondsmen fulfill their part in the judicial system. And the bondsmen's part, more arrests are made annually by bondsmen than all law enforcement put in there. I mean, as far as fugitives. The only fugitives U.S. Marshals are catching are the ones that are high profile and this, that, and the other. But the bondsmen nationwide, account for more rest than all the other apartments because they are out there going, picking these people up and putting them back. There's a check and a balance system. And the bondsmen are coming because they're motivated by the money. And the only way, and they got special rights where they can go here, there, everywhere. Whereas if you're in Broward County, a Broward County officer is not going to go into Dade County looking for you. They'll call Dade if they think you might be down there, but nobody is going to be aggressively looking for a person that's out on pretrial. Nobody. So when they get on a pretrial, you know, they're as good as their word. They may show up, they may not. There's no real penalty. But with a bondsman, there's a penalty, and there's a process. So I'm against it for that. I mean, they have their right. Don't get me wrong. I'm for a pretrial. You got to have pretrial. You got to have your bondsmen. But you got to know who's important here. The bondsman, if they've got ability to bond out of jail, then the bondsman gets first crack at that. After they can't bond out and they're indigent, then pretrial, come here. That's why we're giving you all this money. Get this little fella out over here.
Right. And I mean, from the state's perspective, the bondsman makes sense because the bondsman has a vested interest in making sure that Joe not so good turns up in court.
Right. Right.
Whereas pretrial, apparently, he didn't show up. Never mind.
The only real purpose, the real purpose of pretrial is taking those indigent folks, and I use the word indigent because that's the only reason they should be touching them is because they don't have funding to get out, and the only way they can get out is the system allow them to get out. And that's where pretrial needs to come in. But when you have an independent system working for a government, they need to make a profit too, I would say. And I think it's called cherry picking, where they get all these guys, well, look, we just took this guy out of here, and it cost us all this, and look at this, and they get more money. They need to fall in position of what they originally sold the idea for. They sold the idea to take those 100 or 200 people out of the jail to free up jail space for more serious folks and not just let the vagrants and the little crime guys out on the street that are indigent. You know, some of them have mental health issues. You know, bondsman's taking them out on a $2,000 or $25 or a $500 indigent status kind of thing. They don't want the hassle to be worrying with them either. That's what pretrial's job is. But what happens is the first everybody comes in, pretrial them, and the bondsmen are sitting back going, shit, man, we're trying to make a living. Don't put us out of business, because if you do, pretrial you'll never be able to handle, and then we'll just revert to a civilization that lost their civilization. We'd be a bunch of damn heathens running around here, because they don't have a system in place to go actively and hunt down these pretrial releasees. And they're giving it to anyone, not just the indigent, just anyone, anybody. And they can afford bond, put them on bond. That makes the system work for everybody.
Denny,
yes.
We're running out of time here. I wanted to come back to you to see if you had any more questions or just a wrap-up comment for us.
Yes. I had another question, actually, about the private investigator piece of this. I mean, a COBRA's into private investigations and bounty hunting and so forth. Is if you're in a looking for someone, for example, in another state, out of Florida, and you're asking questions, trying to find this individual or getting information, is that considered private investigative stuff? Or would you need to be licensed in these other states as a PI, or would your bail bond bounty hunter type activities allow you to question people and that type of thing?
Well, I always instruct my guys, it's like this. When in Rome, we're going to act like the Romans do, because that's what the state told me. In Florida, of course, we'll act according to our license. But if we're in Texas, for all intents and purposes, even though we're there on official business in our minds, we are the guests of Texas. So basically the civilian authority that controls us would kick in, and we would ask questions until such a time as they told us to fuck off and get out of here. Then it would be no more, same as if you were non-licensed, if you were just a concerned citizen asking questions. And, you know, a lot of the stuff, it doesn't really play into part for us hunting folks in other states to go there and start asking a bunch of questions. unless we've totally lost a trail and you know, working it like that. But typically when we've left Florida, we have our questions answered, and we know where we're going, and it's a direct hit. We're not even going up there to, unless it's something huge, and, you know, this is maybe where he is. But in the bail bonds, it's a little more cut and dry than that. But in any other state or any place you go, you have to be respectful of their laws, and some of them are real cool with you, and some of them ain't. But as a private citizen of the United States of America, you can go anywhere and talk to anybody until they tell you to get the hell out of there or whatever. And then you need to respect the laws where you're standing, that's all. And, you know, so the license, I mean, the only thing the license does is a check and balance so somebody can get their damn money. And, you know, because there's really, you know, there's, you know, the continuing education that they do on these licenses and stuff is pretty standard stuff that you did already, that you was in school and learned about the paperwork, and maybe there's a change to the law, and maybe you got to collect more money or you can't collect too much or whatever, but there's no change. Like, hey, these double X Winchesters right here shoot clean through the body and through the back of the house, and next door might go through. Nobody's training them, you know, about their guns or what happens if they have to shoot somebody or what, why they're going to shoot somebody and all these different things. And when you go out to arrest someone, first off, they're running. Second off, they ain't wanting to go back to jail. And thirdly, they're sizing you up to see. You stand between me and a locked jail cell. Do I think I whooped your ass? I don't know. So we're going to bring what we can. So when you, like I said, you know, not to get too far off your question there, but when you go to the, just because you're a licensed PI somewhere else, when you get there, you need to respect them. And mostly we don't go flashing our PI status or anything like that. We just go ask them, hey, well, where do you reckon old Jimmy went to? He's down there getting drunk at the bar the other day when I seen him. Okay. And you mosey on down to the bar and take it from there.
Thank you.
We ain't asking no hard questions, Bubba. You scare the hell out of them if you tell them you're a private investigator. For what the hell, private? What the hell? I ain't did nothing wrong. They running too.
Alas, our time is up. I really want to thank everyone that listened in, and particularly Dan Miller for calling in. Dan's a bounty hunter in Kansas. I want to thank my good friend, Cobra. Cobra, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Simon, I love it too. And I just, you know, I sent out to about five or six master bondsmen and master bondsmen that could have answered these questions probably better than I could, since that's what they do all day. They shuffle paper and that kind of stuff. If it comes to picking somebody up, I'd be the one to tell you how to do it. But I'm just sad that they didn't call in today, and I think they didn't call in because of this law that you and I were talking about. So if I violated any laws trying to set people straight as to what they should or should not be doing and checking on things, then I just ask for forgiveness rather than try to get permission beforehand. You feel me?
Oh, I do. And Denny, thank you for calling in. I always enjoy your questions. They're always so well thought out.
Well, thank you, Simon. It's a pleasure. I'm glad I could be with you.
And I do hope that the pair of you will be with me tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m.
I'll be there.
We'll be here at 4 o'clock Eastern listening for you, buddy.
All right. Okay. This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a great Saturday afternoon. Goodbye.
Goodbye, brother.